Welcome to Witchlit, a place to talk about the craft of writing and writing the craft. I'm your host, Victoria Rashke, author, publisher, witch, and nosy Scorpio. Witchlit is brought to you by Thousand Volt Press, a family-owned independent publisher established to produce the books we want to see in the world. Titles including Changing Paths by Yvonne Abreu, Conjuring the Commonplace by Lane Fuller and Corey Thomas Hutchison, A Death in the Dry River by Lisa Allen Agostini, and my most recent book, Verona Green, can be purchased directly from thousandvoltpress.com or wherever you buy books. You can also support the show by buying us a cup of coffee at ko-fi.com/witchlitpodcast. So for an extra special episode, I'm excited to have on Lane Fuller and Corey Thomas Hutchison, who you may know from New World Witchery, but I got to work with on publishing their book, Conjuring the Commonplace, last year. So we finally got them on the show, and I'm going to have them introduce themselves, and then we'll jump into the discussion. Lane, do you want to go first?
No, but I will. I'm Lane. Lane Fuller. It's so weird to like actually say my last name now, because for so long I was just Lane. Corey and I wrote the book together last year, but we've been podcasting together about witchy things for what, almost 15 years now, Corey?
Mm-hmm.
Almost. And I've been a witch for more than half my life now. And I've kind of explored, you know, different aspects of it, you know, started out in Wicca and moved on from there. But yeah, I don't know. I don't know what else. Corey, you take over.
Thank you, Lane. It feels like there's a throw from you finished the sports broadcast and never really weather. Hi. So I'm Corey Thomas Hutchison. I'm the co-host of New World Witchery. As Lane said, we've been doing this for coming up on 15 years. I think next year will be our official 15th year in podcasting. And we've been working together in some capacity or another for longer than that. I think Lane and I have been working together witchcraft wise at least 16, if not 17 years at this point. Just because that was kind of how we became friends, was doing theatrical. We did a theatrical performance, together. And, in the process of that, we just became really, really good friends kind of during the backstage time. And also I think it was at one point, we were both kind of like, I think there's a full moon tonight. And like, yeah, there is a full moon tonight. Do you have any plans for the full moon? I was thinking about maybe going out and looking at the full moon. And at this moment, we sort of had a revelation that we had another connection. And from that point, we became a very sort of witchy companion duo and started doing a lot of work. And so we've, I think, had a really good chance of a really good opportunity to sort of expand one another's horizons witchcraft wise and really develop some practices independently and together, and then work on New World Witchery, which has sort of helped us as well, but also been a really wonderful way to kind of connect with a wider witchy world and people who are interested in especially the kind of the folk magic stuff that we're really interested in. In the process of that, I think it was like a couple of years ago, we were just kind of like, well, what if we write a book? I think I even put it, we have these like shared notes online that we do. And I think I had a section on one of the things that was just like a question. Can Corey and Lane write a book together? We'll find out. And it was this like, can we make some of this knowledge that we've been accumulating over the years? Can we work together to turn that into something that represented both of our interests and both of our voices. And that was, it was a lot of fun. It was remarkable. I mean, working with Lane in any capacity is a lot of fun, but that was true. Certainly a fantastic project.
Yeah. I think I remember like back millennia ago, you telling this story on the podcast of your friendship, Mate Cute,
mm-hmm.
about like, after rehearsal or something. Or, yeah. Mm-hmm. So when did you kind of look at each other and go, let's do a podcast together?
Well, I do remember, Corey, you had an idea for one, and it was more informational, I think. Mm-hmm. It was kind of the idea for what the website has become. Mm-hmm. And it was scripted and, you know, things of that nature. But then you had mentioned it to me and you were like, I don't know, it's just not like, it's not working. Like, I don't love it or something like that. And I don't know. I hesitated to say it because I didn't want to, like, you know, be inviting myself into something where I wasn't necessarily welcome. But I was kind of like, well, maybe you need a co-host. You know, maybe it needs like somebody with you to kind of bounce things off of. And that has ended up really working in our opinion and mm-hmm. hopefully with our listeners as well. Just because, you know, while we do compliment each other in a lot of ways, we also, compliment in that we agree on a lot of things, but then there are other things that we don't agree on and we can kind of help each other, you know, tease out why for people who may, you know, agree with one of us and not the other, but are still interested in different, you know, perspectives, or somebody who doesn't agree with either of us and maybe wants to hear different takes on, you know, just being a witch. And so, yeah, mm-hmm. I've always liked that part of our friendship.
Yeah, absolutely. Not to be too reductive about it, but it's a definitely like head and heart kind of a thing. Where like I can get very caught up in kind of like let's research this, let's get into the books. And Lane is very, very good about saying like, yeah, but how does that actually apply? Like, how, you know, what does that actually mean? And sort of teasing that meaning out in the conversation. And we wind up with a really, really robust picture of whatever sort of practice that we're talking about in that moment, because we can have that conversation. Yeah, that's very much how it started. Was I'd kind of brought this idea like, oh, I really want to do a podcast. At the time, I was listening to a lot of Peter Padden's Crooked Path podcast, and he did mm-hmm. that solo, but I am no Peter Padden. And so it was one of these things where like any iteration of this just felt very like, let's read a Wikipedia article on Basil. You know, like, it just didn't have a lot of like oomph or vavoom. But when we turned it into a conversation, I think Liam was very, very right. It changed it and it made it so much mm-hmm. more engaging and interesting. And people responded to that. Like from the very, very get-go, once we started putting this out, people were eager to hear more, to talk about it. And Lynn, I don't know if you feel this way or not, but like one of the things that I've kind of loved over the years is how many people will then share their lore back with us. They'll like write in and say like, oh, you talked about this. We just did an episode on desert magic, right? And we had several people who listened to the first half of that episode and immediately were like, hey, I live in the desert. Here's some things that you should talk about too. And like that kind of enthusiasm where people really want to share their lore and get it out there. That's one of the best things about this that we get to do.
Agreed.
I mean, I think for me, like, stepping into my editor hat role. mm-hmm. uh-huh. Like that was one of the things, like in the first manuscript of Conjuring the Commonplace, is I felt like you both had taken the opportunity to write the book kind of like the podcast. Like mm-hmm. it felt like those were your voices. And I know there were a lot of side notes like, oh, you can cut this if you want to. And I was like, absolutely not. And then when we had it edited, she was like, well, I would cut this. And I'm like, nope.
Yes, we have joked before that your line editor, that we all used, did not really care for our voices. But it was more just a joke on them saying, like, you know, if you don't really, I don't know, if you don't get their kind of humor, maybe it wouldn't work. But I think, you know, a lot of the people who are buying this kind of have some sort of experience with us. Mm-hmm. And if not, hopefully they get a feel for it. I hope mm-hmm. it's not too, alienating or anything, but I do think it's fun. And you're right, it is still in our voices.
Yeah. No, yeah, I think that was really important to me. I mean, not that we've like, I mean, we didn't put like New World Witcher on the cover, maybe because somebody already wrote a book called that. But, but you know, we really talked about it in the marketing, but it wasn't like, it's not like up front and center on the cover of the book. But I do think that people who have listened to your podcast for 15 years, just saying that phrase kind of makes me as a podcaster die a little bit inside. Like I can't imagine doing it for 15 years, but,
just 15 more and we get a retirement, we get a pension.
Yeah, really? I'm not sure.
Who do we contact?
Your 35 cents of monetization from YouTube. But yeah, I mean, I just wanted it to be a continuation of that, which I felt is what you all wanted from the beginning too. And so mm-hmm. I think it worked for me personally. I feel like it worked that way. But yeah, I think about when you send people writing into your lore, and I think I left a lot of editorial notes about, oh, and by the way.
You did, yes. Like, I know this thing. Here's the thing that I do. And I think we worked a couple of them in there.
Yeah, we did. Yeah. Like,
yeah. Because when I read the manuscript we sent to the editor, I was like, oh, I got a little flutter in my heart. Oh. So I have a question. Mm-hmm. And I'm curious, did either of you read through the index?
Read through the index of our book?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I'm sure I did at the time, but I've slept since then. So, yeah.
So
I'm curious where this is going.
Me too.
So it's a tiny little Easter egg that I put in because I did the index.
Mm-hmm.
And so if you look under M for Mockingbird, mm-hmm. I do believe there's a note.
Oh.
Okay, hang on here.
If you have your copy, I'll let you find it.
Off my bookshelf.
It's been almost a year, and I was really surprised nobody had said
anything. That's really funny.
Yeah, I think at a certain point, like we were happy it was out there.
Mm-hmm.
Menstrual blood. Let's see. See the smuggest bird. That's cute. Yes. Yes. That's been an ongoing. I mean, hopefully the people who are listening to this are not like, what kind of esoteric bull crap is this? Yeah, no, we've had a longstanding argument about just how smug birds can be. And it's mm-hmm. weird because like around the same time we started doing that, there's also been this thing about like birds aren't real.
Yes.
And like there's this whole like account called effing birds, and like, boy, birds are really taking it on the chin, or the beak, I guess, in the past couple of years.
Well, and it kind of started with put a bird on it, right? I mean,
right.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly.
So there's been,
and I did. I had so many like bird jewelry and, you know, like birds on clothing and mm-hmm. coats and things of that nature. I've definitely put birds on it.
Yeah. I mean, I have a bird on me. I have a bird tattoo.
So. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
But
Thank you for the smoke bird.
I put that in there just for y'all.
Amazing.
But then I thought it was funny. It's like, maybe nobody looks at indexes anymore.
I think I for sure do
when I'm doing research.
Yeah. Oh my gosh. Yes. Like index. I have a couple books that I use for research now that do not have indexes. And like one of them, I finally just went online and bought an electronic copy so I could search it.
Yes.
Because I was so mm-hmm. frustrated.
That's smart.
Mm-hmm.
But Control F is your friend.
Yes. Yep. Yes. So in addition to writing a book together and doing a New World Witchery together, you all have another podcast too.
We do.
We do. Mm-hmm.
Which, you have a cat.
I do have a cat. And he's very upset. He's like, Mom, you're not supposed to be in here right now. Why are you in here?
It is not the time or the place.
Yes. But I did want to give you an opportunity to talk about it, because I feel like, I mean, I do talk about it some on New World Witchery, but I mm-hmm. find it really fascinating. I haven't listened a lot recently just because my life has been stuck in front of my computer doing things where I can't listen to somebody else talking. But
fair.
But I did want to give you an opportunity to talk about it.
It's fine. We're in the middle of season 6, so you're missing nothing. sorry, that's a total. We probably should say what this show is before we...
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Elaine, do you want to mention this one?
Yeah. So I've been a Buffy the Vampire Slayer fan for a very long time. Introduced it to Corey, had been introduced before, but like, mm-hmm. you know, wasn't like in love with it. And I guess it stuck or something. But yeah, so we do the podcast going through each episode of Buffy, but we also approach it from a witchcraft point of view and as witches. And we talk about, you know, Willow being into magic and what that could look like if she were actually doing a love spell, and you know, if mm-hmm. what would you actually use canary feathers for, not a spell on, I don't know, sadness or something like mm-hmm. they have her do. But yeah, and so we talk, you know, about some of the I guess the myths that go into mm-hmm. a lot of, or mythology, I guess. So what mm-hmm. we have different episodes that are just us discussing those different mythical creatures or mythical concepts. So mm-hmm. we have myth of the vampire, of course, myth of the witch, myth of Frankenstein. And then we also have
werewolves, hellmouths.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, hellmouth. That was a good one. So we did like portals to, you know, different worlds mm-hmm. and things like that. Just ones that you would encounter through folklore, history, popular literature, stuff like that. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And it's been in, yeah, Lane's right. It was something where, so I've had several people, and I apologize to my, I had a person who's a friend in college who tried so hard to get me into Buffy, and my my older brother and his wife tried very hard to get me into Buffy. And in both of those cases, it was kind of like, it's fine. It seems great. But I was only seeing one or two episodes, and Lane was so enthusiastic about it. She was just like, no, you have to watch this if we're going to be friends, basically. This is a homework assignment. Just get through season. I don't even think you said get through season one. I think you were just like, give it like a couple of episodes. And once I did that, once I could really start to put some continuity together with it, I was like, oh, this is really interesting. And it wasn't, you know, it's interesting and it's fun because it's a fun show. We know now that it also had some problematic stuff going on behind mm-hmm. the scenes, which yeah. is stuff that we'll talk about too. But it was revolutionary in its own time because of what it was doing, where it flipped this trope of, you know, the blonde teenage girl who goes alone into the spooky house and winds up in this incredibly dangerous situation. And this sort of flipped that around and said, what if she was the dangerous situation? What if she's the actually the most dangerous thing in the haunted house? And played with that. And I was like, this is really fascinating. And then started seeing all this interesting folklore, which, especially in the hands of certain writers on the show, is really well developed. Mm-hmm. And you can really see some research and some thought into it. And some cases, certain writers completely throw that out the window and they're like, tarot cards, what are those? Those can be anything. Let's just make them up. So we have a few people who do that.
Yeah.
But large, by and large, it was really, really interesting to kind of see this stuff come together and then see these relationships, see these characters come together. And it's, in some ways, I think a really good encapsulation of what Lane and I kind of focus on, where, you know, Lane can see the kind of bigger picture of the story, the continuity of these characters, and really get invested in this narrative. And I'm kind of, you know, mentally nitpicking and annotating as we go along, kind of finding all the stuff, but it kind of helps both of us love it more, if that makes sense. Mm-hmm. So,
mm-hmm. No, that does make sense. And I think getting it filtered through like a cult practitioner lens mm-hmm. makes for a really interesting take on it too. So with all of these things that you all do, like, you have a lot of time together as creative people, and you're also friends on top of that. Mm-hmm. So is there ever a moment when you're just like, I need a break?
I mean, I'll say for me, if, and Corey, if your answer is different, that is totally okay. But for me, no, because we honestly, it sounds like we spend a lot more time together than we really do. Mm-hmm. You know, we do obviously talk when we're recording. And then we text when we can, but, you know, we're both pretty busy. And mm-hmm. I wish I saw more of Corey. You know, like, we do mm-hmm. occasionally are able to get together. We were actually signing some books to send out the other night, and we were able to sit down and record for the Buffy podcast, which I don't think we ever said the name of. It's called Myth Taken, a Buffy the Vampire mm-hmm. Slayer podcast. But just Myth Taken is just one word. But anyway, so, and we were able to record in the same place, which we haven't done in quite a while, I think almost a year. And that was when we were at Mystic South, you know, like a mm-hmm. little convention thing yeah. together. So so for me, no. But again, Corey, if your answer is different, totally fine. I will not be offended. But that's mine.
I can't get rid of her fast. No, I'm kidding. Like, no, you're exactly right. It's one of those things where, honestly, a lot of the time that we wind up interacting is stuff for our various shows and things like that. But we almost always make time before or after the shows. We'll sit and we'll chat a little bit just to catch up with each other. But I find, like, our, you know, we try to find time to like get together and hang out outside of that. Oftentimes we'll basically go see scary movies together and stuff, mm-hmm. Which, like, I think Alien Romulus is coming out soon, and I'm booking you for that because we're both yes. Alien fans.
Yes, it looks like a heist gone wrong in space with aliens. Yes. I'm here for it.
100% down for that. So, and like, that's the thing, is like, we'll try to get some time together to do that. But like, even that is so rare. So few and far between. Honestly, the early days of us doing stuff together, we did a little more witchcraft stuff together a little more often. But then we also would, you know, you'd come over and you'd knit. You know, we hung out. We were watching, I think, Lost sort of collectively for a while there.
Yeah.
So, you know, early on, we definitely spent a little more time face to face together. And over the years, you know, I've moved different places. And so it's been a much more sort of telecommunications based friendship. And we've always right. stayed in touch. I know that was such an like, gosh, what a boomer. Telecommunications. yeah. Anyway, you need telegraph to
Pony Express.
Yes, exactly. But yeah, so we've, you know, not had as much time to actually spend time together over the past couple of years, but now we're kind of in a closer proximity and we're making more time for that. And that has been wonderful. So I don't get enough of Lane. I honestly, that Mystic South, when we went to that last year and we got like a whole weekend to just kind of hang out, it was awesome. And that's been true when we do any, like we've done these little trips together before. And like, Lane's one of my favorite people to travel with.
So. We're both fairly easygoing. We'll stop at Bucky's, you know, like it's fun. We're just like, yeah. That's good for me. Let's go. You know, it's just like, yeah, we do have our differences, obviously, but yeah, we can both be just like, all right, that works for me.
Well, I think if you can travel together, like with a friend, partner, whatever, like that, that's usually a good sign. I always joke when I've had friends go like on big trips with like new people they're seeing or something. And I'm like, y'all are going to be married or hate each other when you get back. Unfortunately, a lot of times it's hate each other. So, yeah. So I think having a travel companion that you mesh with is huge. And also probably a companion that you can write a book with should be on that list. So what was that like writing a book together? Like, what was the process for y'all?
Well, we first sat down and thought the chapter titles, honestly, we were just like, throw stuff out there. What is stuff in the home that we want to cover? And of course, you know, one of the ones that we first threw out were the ones that were kind of more important to each of us. But then we rounded it out a bit more. And we just each, you know, took chapters as they kind of spoke to us. And we would go back and add a few things into other people's, or other people, you know, the other person's chapter. And I feel like the hardest part was finding like the, not the voice necessarily of ourselves, but just making that mesh into one where it wasn't jarring. Like, because we thought about, you know, maybe doing a different font or different colors or something like that. But we mainly just tried to make it as clear as possible without being too obtrusive. Sorry, that was kind of like not the answer to the question there at the end, but I got there somehow.
I think it worked. Yeah. Yeah. And I mean, that's basically, that was the process, was, you know, sitting down, jotting out outlines, creating kind of a plan for the book. And then we would kind of each work solo, but we would have these, I mean, we would have these collaborative days. I still remember, like, we went up to my university library one day and just sat and, you know, just worked on chapters independently, but together. And then we could bounce ideas off of each other. We could talk, and we would do that every once in a while. We'd do little days like that, or we would do these little exchanges and phone calls and talk about, you know, what we were working on, just because it was something that I think was really, it was important to both of us that this be us and not just like not two separate people, you know, alternating chapters or something like that. We could really tell the difference, but there was a sort of harmonized, unified, like, oh, you can read it and you could read pretty much every chapter and hear just Lane's voice in your head, or hear just my voice, or kind of hear it like ebb and flow through a conversation, and it would all make sense. It'd all feel very, very natural, as opposed to being very jarringly like one chapter is this way, one chapter is this way. So there was a very like strong sense of like, how do we integrate this so that this really does feel like you are sitting down with us, or like walking around a kitchen or a house with us, and we're just like poking at different things and saying like, oh, I see you have a roll of quarters. Have you ever thought about using those state quarters because they have these symbols on them, and making magical charms or tokens out of those, making little amulets out of those? oh, well, that's, well, what would you do? You know, what would you do if you had, you know, the, was it, is it Alaska that has the bear on the back of it?
Or California, maybe?
Or maybe it was California. Yeah, like, so what do you, if you have a bear on the back of it? Oh, well, that could be this. It became this kind of like organic conversation that's happening on the page. And that was, I mean, I don't know there was definitely an intention to make it that way. But I think what actually happened in the end, also through the help of our wonderful editor, we should say, was that by the end of that process, it really had refined itself to where that felt very natural on the page, at least to me. So. Mm-hmm.
I hope so. I hope that other people agree.
Yeah. I mean, we don't have a chorus to let us know if we all succeeded in what we did. Sure. But I feel like you all have gotten, and I think in general, we've gotten good feedback on the book. Mm-hmm. So what do you think, like, Corey, you've written a book yourself, you've edited, you've contributed academically, like, did this feel really different for you?
Definitely did. In some ways, so it's very easy to drown yourself in the work when you're working solo. And in some ways that can be a good thing because you can, you know, you're working at your own pace and you're sort of tackling your own stuff as you go. But when you're working collaboratively, then you have to take into account other people. And I do think that changes the writing process and the dynamic just a little bit. And when you're working specifically collaboratively on an entire book with another person, then it is a conversation. It is something where you have to be constantly sharing contact and input with one another. You know, and I've done collaborative work when I did the editing for the Llewellyn complete book of North American folk magic. I was definitely collaborating, but I was sort of the helmsman for that project. So it was me sort of, you know, telling people when deadlines were due and, you know, asking them to make certain edits and asking them questions about what they're turning in and, you know, just trying to get them to turn in specific things in specific ways so that it can become a more uniform book. But it was a little less conversational than Conjuring the Commonplace, which is very, very much a conversation that Lane and I were having in an ongoing way about all these different topics that we were both very interested in. Mm-hmm. And we had a really good time with that, I think. But it is a different process. It's a very different process. And Lane, I don't know, like, did you feel like, you know, you'd be perfectly honest on this one. Like, were there ever times when you felt like I was, you know, pushing you to do things or like, you, like goading you, you know, for better or for worse, or holding you back in any way?
Holding back? No, not at all. Yeah. But like pushing, yes, but like in a way that I needed, like never once did I feel like resentful or anything like that. It was always like, yep, you're right. I need to get moving on this. Or, I do need to focus on that chapter first so that Corey can put his part in and then I can focus on that other one. So yeah, it was, there was definitely push, but it was never, you know, like, you better do this when I'm like dying in the bed or anything. Like, please, I just need a break.
Right. I know you've been hospitalized for a week, but we do have a deadline.
Yeah, cracking the whip.
Right. Yeah.
So Lane, this was your first book. So what has that been like to get that baby out in the world?
I don't know. It feels so like, what is the word I'm looking for?
Amazing. Just wonderful.
Amazing, fantastic. But just kind of unreal as well. Like it just does. It still doesn't feel quite real somehow. I don't know. My mom though, ordered it off Amazon and brought it for me to sign, and that felt really real. And that was just, aww. I don't know. It's just so strange. It just, I don't even know how to describe it. Yeah. It's just, I mean, something I've dreamt about for a very long time. So really cool. Really, really cool.
Has it opened the floodgate? Are you ready to do another book?
Magic wise? I don't know. Now I would love to write like a romance I have an idea for kids books and I have a lot of ideas, but I don't have a lot of get up and go. So yeah. It's a matter of motivation, which I think is why I thrived with Corey by my side.
It is kind of nice to have one to someone to just poke you. I saw something today, and I've had a friend who had someone do this for her. It's basically author services in the form of calling you every few days to ask how much you've written or yell at you about not writing. It's like, I get that at home.
I mean, my own brain does that to me.
Yeah. Indeed,
so.
But I mean, I do think, I mean, especially, I mean, you both have children who are home at home. Mm-hmm. Corey, you're teaching and you're doing this podcast and you're writing. And I mean, you both have so much going on. Like, how do you carve out time to be creative? And even if it's not about writing, like, how do you set aside that time to do things for you?
Is that specifically for me or for both of us?
For both of you, really.
Okay.
I mean, you're both busy people.
Sure. I mean, I can only really answer that for myself. I think, you know, that question, it's one of those things where when writers listen to other writers talk about their writing process, it can be very, very easy to stop and say, oh, this person is doing this thing this way, I should do it this way. But I want to be really, really clear. There's no one writing process that's going to work for everybody. I think was it Hemingway who had to like sharpen all of his pencils before he started writing? Mm-hmm. Like, and there are people who have to like take long walks before they can write.
There's also an apocryphal story. I think it's apocryphal. It could be true about Nabokov standing on a kitchen chair and writing on top of the refrigerator.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. These kind of like weird esoteric ways that people write. And then you have people, I think it was like Maya Angelou, who had a very dedicated, disciplined practice of writing, where she set aside a specific amount of time every day to do her writing. Mm-hmm. And for me, like, I don't quite do the, like, I have a disciplined every day, I will do a little bit of writing about this, but I have a very disciplined, I say disciplined, I operate by lists and documents and I keep track of everything. And in some ways it's a very, like, I'm the only one who could decipher what I'm doing, but I know it's organized. Mm-hmm. I know very well how it's organized. And so I'm aware, like, I keep a whiteboard that sort of organizes, like, here are all the different projects I'm working on for the next quarter. Here's, you know, some of the big things that I need to accomplish. And then I can break those down into kind of additional task lists and say, like, okay, well, here's some things I need to get done. The problem for me, and Lane will probably attest to this, is there's too many things on those lists. Mm-hmm. I tend to have a lot of stuff I'm trying to accomplish at any given time. And so I will say, one of the reasons I kind of give a warning about all these things is, just because a writer is able to write and accomplish the task of writing does not mean that they have done so in a healthy or reasonable way. And I am a very strong example of that. I tend to forgo sleep. I tend to burn out and get really stressed out. And I, you know, can really kind of, you know, get mess with my head, mess with my mental health, my mental well-being as part of the writing process. And so I would say I have found a way that works for me to accomplish the goal of writing the things I want to write. I also kind of do that because I write like I have an expiration date, which is to say that, like, I have a sense of, like, I must write everything I want to write by a certain point in my life, or else I will never get to write that thing. And there's some reasons for that, some conditions that kind of go into that. But it definitely creates an unhealthy psychological pressure on on me that I am kind of always working under. So don't do that. Don't emulate that. Like, find the process that works for you. That's what I'm saying.
Yeah. It doesn't break you a lot.
Yeah. Yeah. I know Stephen King writes like 3,000 words a day, I want to say. He just gets up, writes however long it takes to write those words, and then quits, and that's it. Mm-hmm. And that's what he's done for years. But for me, like, some of the best time that I write, I've found, is at 3 a.m. And it's not like I'm sitting around waiting for the clock to click over. It's just when I stay up late and, you know, I'm doing other things. And then I kind of, when I find I'm able to get in the groove, it's late. It's when I've locked myself away, when there's nobody that I'm distracted by, I guess. Mm-hmm. And that's, yeah, I went without a lot of sleep. I'll say that.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
I still do, unfortunately, but yeah, that's just kind of how life is right now.
Yeah, that makes sense. I mean, I can't remember if I've told this story in the podcast or not, but like I did my master's degree in creative writing and poetry. And then I basically stopped writing for almost 20 years. Not really 20, but close.
I mean, I'm not trying to interrupt you, but mine was in, you know, basically literature reading. You know, I did a lot of reading and I graduated and I did not pick up a book for years because I was just so tired.
Yeah, I mean, mine
I'm sorry. Go ahead.
Oh, no. Mine was mostly because I had a kid and I was a single mom. And so I was like, I gotta make money. I gotta do all this stuff. Writing can come later. And then he graduated from high school and it was like the barn door opened, you know? And I was like, oh, I can do this now and not feel guilty about it. Even though there are still times I feel guilty about taking time away from my family, even though my kid is almost 30. And I was like, I should be doing something else. So I still have like that weird writer guilt, I guess, or the writer guilt that I think is mostly put on women. I mean, I will not say that's 100% true. But I think women catch a lot of that. Like, shouldn't be doing something else right now. So, yeah.
Shouldn't you be momming?
Yeah. I mean, not that I can't figure out things to do to procrastinate writing. I mean, my spices are very organized. Let's put it that way. But
I have a question for both of you. When you mentioned procrastinate writing, it made me think of something. Do you ever procrastinate writing by writing?
Oh, yes.
By writing the wrong thing?
Yes.
Yes.
100%.
That happens a lot, actually, with the book, with us. Like, I would be working on like a fiction story that I was really excited about. And like any other time, if I were to try to work on that story, I would sit and be blank. But yeah, like working on the book, I'd be like, oh, my God, I just had a great idea for the dialogue for that. Okay, let me go back. It's ridiculous.
Yes. Yeah. It's true. I currently have two books going. I have a novel going and this big project that I've been working on. And the novel is currently on ice because the project has gotten some steam behind it. But I keep going, oh, I just want to go work on the novel today. Mm-hmm. I just want to go work on that. And I also
That's
do morning
good that you're
pages.
Passionate about it still, though.
Yeah. And I also do morning pages every day, which most days is a page. And I'm like, okay, I'm just going to dump everything out. But sometimes I will procrastinate getting started writing on the project and keep writing morning pages, which no one will ever see but me, or maybe somebody 100 years from now. I don't know. So, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I've been, my youngest daughter and I, we're playing this. It's basically a solo RPG game called Apothecaria, where like you're taking over as the village witch for a town, and like so every day you like draw cards and figure out like, you know, what's going to happen that day and like what potions do you need to brew and et cetera. But it's all a writing game where you're like writing out the story as you go. And if I'm like, sometimes I'm like, I just want to go play that game with my kid.
Aww,
and like both of us will write, and I'm like, I just wrote 3,000 words that no one will ever see, that have no value. And then I have to stop and go like, except that they have the value of like my kid and I doing this thing together.
Yeah.
So, but yeah, like I find like it's so easy to not distract is the wrong word, but to sort of distribute my writing that way. Yeah. And, but then at the same time, I'm kind of curious, like, do you feel guilt where you're like, I just wrote 3,000 words. Now I have to like write another 3,000 words that go towards something that's going to get published. Like,
no, not necessarily. I mean, I don't know about you, Lane, but like sometimes I'm just like, that's the writing today. That's it. I'm done. Mm-hmm. You know, and it's like, that's what I got in me today.
Yep.
And I also think what you said about that no one will ever see. And I think I said that too, and it might not have value, but I feel like I've fully embodied the motto, nothing's wasted on a writer.
Mm.
And I have occasionally found myself going back to those morning pages to go, what did I say about that? And then it winds up in a book somewhere else.
Mm-hmm.
So I think I don't think it's a waste of time.
Mm.
We actually talk about on the Buffy podcast, we talk about kill your darlings, because we do talk about writer influence And, you know, some podcasts are death of the author, basically, when it comes to interpretation. They only want to look at like the text itself, you know, the show and just how they interpret it. And that's totally valid. It's just Corey and I wanted, you know, a different way to look at it and one that we kind of subscribe to more, which is not so much death of the author. And so I found a piece of writing advice that was like, okay, if you do have to kind of kill your darlings, which is a piece of advice given to writers, you know, that means even if something is great and you're really proud of how it is written, if it's not working, it's just not working and you just need to get rid of it. But I don't ever like delete any of that stuff. I always just like put it in its own little, you know, separate folder or like down at the bottom of the page in case I need it for that particular chapter or, you know, that just that story in general or whatever. But yeah, so I'm the same way where I save all the things that I would otherwise kind of delete.
Mm-hmm. Yes, I write with a running document that says offcuts.
Yes, yeah.
Yeah, and we've, and you know, just to lend truth to that, we literally, so every year we produce something called an annual zine for our Patreon supporters, which we'll write little like mini articles and collect some things that we've done over the year. And we'll put those together and give it a theme and send it out. And it's just, you know, a little 30, 40 page booklet. But one of the ones we did for one of our most recent years was Ephemera. And it was basically offcuts from our writing process over the years. So yeah, absolutely. We find uses for those things. It's true.
Yeah. Yeah. It was fun because we did have journal entries and things of that nature, you know, that we like scanned in, but then we also had digital ephemera that, you know, we were able to put on. So yeah, it was fun.
Yeah. Yeah. Having received one of those, I really enjoyed it. So I guess on the flip side of that, like what, like how do you both feed the well creatively? Like what is your go-to to do that? Like reading movies, like what is the thing that inspires you when things feel like they're dry?
I mean, it comes in unexpected places sometimes. Recently, The Lion King came back into movie theaters for the 30th anniversary. I mean, and that's a movie I've seen so many times. It's my youngest brother's favorite Disney movie. I could sit here and, you know, quote it and sing it like word for word right now. But it's never been one of my favorites. And it recently, like the past few years, I'm like, Lion King's not my, it's all right. Seeing it again and like the big screen and how beautiful the animation was and everything, it really like made me kind of reappreciate the story as well and how well told it is. And that actually made me want to write. I was like, oh, okay. So I'm like, you know, I'm connecting little things here and there that obviously I've connected before. Like I said, I've seen this movie a million times, but I don't know. There was something different about seeing it again on the big screen and experiencing it with my daughter who somehow had never seen it before. Like, I don't know how I let that happen in her 9 years, but she had never seen it. So we went and saw it in theaters and it was a great experience, but it also really made me want to write and like explore story. And I don't know, that makes me sound really pretentious because I'm just like the art of storytelling is so fascinating to me. So anyway,
I don't think you sound pretentious.
Thank you.
Yeah. Not sure. You know, it's one of those things where I'm like, I don't know if I have a great answer for that question. One, I think that for me, the well is always full. There's always stuff in it just because anytime I think of anything that I might be interested in writing about, I'll make a note of it somewhere. I have documents that kind of track that. And so then I can go and expand it and I kind of know what I'm going to do for different things. So I always have a writing project to work on if I want one. So that's always there. But then the stuff that actually kind of gets me, you know, inspired to write, like it makes me really want to go sit and do stuff. Oftentimes it'll come when I'm encountering something that it pushes that button of, speaking of sounding pretentious, this is going to sound super pretentious, pushes that button of whimsy, right? Pushes that sort of the wonder button, right? Mm-hmm. And it sort of makes that imaginative side of me, the little kid in me that, you know, wanted to turn all the sticks and mud in the backyard into potions, or wanted to turn, you know, every creepy looking tree into a dragon, you know, like it reawakens that for me. So I'll, like, I saw a movie a while back called Problemista, that was about this young man trying to like launch a toy company for toys that were terrible toys. Like the whole thing was like a slinky that refused to go downstairs because it can make up its own mind. Like it was this kind of stuff, but then like he has to work for this woman who basically is a constant complainer and things like this. But it was done in such a creative, original way where it was weaving together myth and fantasy and story around this really mundane thing that was happening. And so that really tickled my fancy and got me going, like, I really want to do something with that. There's an author who wrote a book called, I think it's called The Book of Briars, that was done as a sort of novel that was also written as sort of like internet forum posts. And the sort of format of that made me really interested in like, oh, well, you could see this kind of as something that, and then they had also actually created the internet forum outside of the book, and you could go to that internet. So it was this kind of like interactive world that you could play with.
Oh, wow.
And so those kinds of things, like when I bump into stuff that's really got that, you know, energizing kind of whimsical, you know, wonder to it, that's the kind of stuff that'll make me want to go sit and like, you know, basically test my mettle and say like, can I do that? Can I make somebody feel that way? Cause that's what I really want to do. And so, you know, what am I going to do to kind of get there? So that's kind of the closest I get. And I think that sounds pretty pretentious, but that's just me.
I think that sounds pretentious. Maybe my ideas about pretentious are different, but I don't think that sounds pretentious.
maybe pretentious wasn't the right word, but. Yeah.
No, I mean, because I do think, I mean, there's times when I've read things, like I don't write poetry really much anymore, but occasionally I will read poems that have that effect of like, oh, I want, because it's, for me, a lot of times it's about language just in and of itself. Like I'm just fascinated with language and how we communicate, written, spoken, all of that. And sometimes it'll just be like literally a turn of phrase and I'll be like, oh, that is perfect. How do I get that? You know, like, so.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Yeah. It's not like a jealousy. It's not like a, you know, like, oh, they got there first. I was, you know, going to do that or something. It's the sense of like, oh, you can do that. That's awesome. How do I do
exactly.
that?
Exactly. Yeah. Oh yeah. I try really hard not to be jealous as a writer. I just, I feel like that is the way to put yourself into permanent burnout.
For sure. Yeah. Yeah. I'm curious, do either of you, well, I mean, I know the answer to this for Lane, at least to some extent. Like, do you find that, I mean, we're all writers. Do you also look for other places to just sort of engage your creativity? Cause like I do a lot of, you know, drawing and illustration, or I'll try to do like little animations and stuff like that, you know, so that if I'm not writing, at least I have some place to put that energy to kind of keep the fire stoked. And Lane, I know that you do, you know, fiber crafts and things like that, and other kind of crafts. So is that true for kind of all of us?
Yeah. I mean, for me, I say this, and I'm going to probably get a comment from my editor when he edits this. but I have been working on this very long embroidery project. And so it's an alphabet of medieval illuminated letters. That I find in manuscripts and like, you know, transfer with carbon to fabric and then basically color with thread, right? But also is a letter, is each letter stands for some like ridiculous modern slang or insults or like occasionally just weird, like almost archaic words.
What? Can I have an example?
So like A is for asshat and B is for batshit and C is for clusterfuck. So that's kind of the direction it's going. So
is it going to be S is for skibbity, or are we going to restrain ourselves?
I don't know. So like the last one I just did, the last one I finished was P. And it's just piss with like four S's.
Love that.
So and I've been stuck on Q for a while because it's hard, but I have a great Q now. I finally found a Q. There's not a lot of illuminated Qs, strangely, that I liked. So it took me a long time to find one. But yeah, so that, and then I also cook. So I lost my cooking mojo during COVID a little bit, but it's come back somewhat. So that feels kind of good.
I'm sure.
Absolutely.
It always feels nice when you've been in a slump and then it's finally back. You're like, oh, I missed you.
I just got to the point where, like, standing in the kitchen, I was like, please, God, anything. I will eat dry dust. I don't want to do this. And then it just kind of came back. It's still wavering, but it's coming back. So, yeah. But to answer your question in a bigger way, Corey, I've talked to so many people on the show. Who have another outlet of some sort. They're a musician, they paint, they draw, you know, they flower arrange. I mean, just multiple things. So I think I feel like if you can open that creative door, if you let yourself do that, I think a lot of people hold themselves back from doing that. But I think once you open it and you embrace it, then you kind of find other things you want to do too.
Yeah. And you don't have to be good at all of them. And you don't have to necessarily, like, they don't have to be things you do for a living either. Like, they can just be things that you do because you create.
Yeah.
I think that's really important. So.
I kind of want the idea of the side hustle to die, but that's just me personally.
Too.
Yes. You don't have to monetize everything.
Yes.
But yes. Oh, I feel like I could talk to you all for hours, but I also know that where you are, it's late. So, but I just wanted to give you an opportunity to say, like, anything else you wanted to about the book. This will come out the second week of September, kind of the almost anniversary of the book coming out. So, like, just kind of what would you want to tell people, or do you want to plug something coming up? Either, both.
Well, not to be too, like, bootlicky about it, but, you know, thanks to you for working with us, being so flexible, you know. We've had health stuff, family stuff, all kinds of stuff come up. I mean, I know on your end as well, but we just, Corey and I both really appreciate it. And it was really, really lovely to work with you. And we really appreciate it.
Yeah, absolutely. It was, I mean, I've worked with a lot of editors at this point. That does sound pretentious. I've worked with a lot of editors. But I've worked with several. several letters, and every editor kind of brings something unique to the game, and your patience, but not necessarily the patience in the sense of, like, you know, you just kind of put up with anything, but it's sort of like your check-ins were gentle check-ins, and your questions were questions that would guide us to, you know, making choices that would sort of move the book along. Like, I really appreciated that from
thank
you. So thank you for that. And then the book itself, I mean, you know, the one of the things that, like, I think that people, I hope that people will go and look for this book. This is, you know, we joked a lot about this while we were writing it, that this is basically, it's cottagecore witchcraft, you know, if you need to put a hashtag on it, right? But it really is, it's the whole point of this book is that anything that you have around you probably has some history, some folkloric roots, some folklore connection to something more wonderful than what it is. Like, even a simple paperclip, there, you know, there's magic to be found in that. And I really hope that people, you know, if they wind up picking up this book, that they start to, that what it sort of does is sort of have them, you know, I'm going to really date myself with this reference here, but sort of turn their daily experience into a pop-up video. Where they're kind of looking around and they just get little, like, bloop, 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 you know, like things like, oh, I've got, you know, this book of matches here. Oh yeah. You know what? I can do this little interesting divination where I strike a match and I see which way it bends as it burns. And that tells me something, because particularly for people who are interested in magic, like, sometimes we can get really caught up in this idea of, like, oh, I really want to do some magic. I really want to do a spell. And then you're like, okay, well, how do I carve out 20, 30, 40, 50 minutes to light a candle and put down an altar cloth and gather this and gather this. But you can do magic in a matter of seconds. And it just takes kind of being attuned to what's around you and paying attention to that. So I really do hope people will go look at this book and I don't know, just maybe experience a little bit of that wonder and that whimsy, hit that wonder button, you know, and let it make the little pop-up video annotations to your daily life.
Yeah, I like how you think that pop-up video is going to date you when referencing a zine didn't already.
Everyone knows what a zine is.
Well, zines are cool now, though. Zines are current and cool.
So I just remember being in our Discord and someone saying, I'm so sorry, but what's a zine? And I just wanted to die. I think I sent the gif of Rose from Titanic saying, it's been 84 years.
it's the Raiders of the Lost Ark where the guy like starts turning into dust.
So I had the great good fortune of interviewing Margaret Killjoy on the podcast. Mm-hmm. And she said that she felt like podcasts were cool. Everybody's got one, like a zine in the 90s. And I was like, yes, exactly. But now the 90s are cool again. So people are doing zines again.
Yeah. Apparently.
Yeah.
They were ahead of the curve, boys.
Like, I wore that the first time.
Yeah.
I'm not doing it now.
Seeing, like, basically the Delia's catalog is at Target right now. And it's very confusing for me.
Like, oh, I don't need a baby doll dress. That's okay.
But that baby doll dress needs you. That's what's important.
No.
No one else will wear it as well.
No. We're a maxi dress girl these days. But thank you both. I mean,
thank you.
And I mean, thanks for coming to us with the book. Like, I felt like that was an honor, a huge honor for us. Because we are tiny small potatoes. And I just felt really proud that you all came to us to do that.
You were really enthusiastic and wonderful to work with. So mm-hmm. thank you for being that. No. That was a great experience.
For sure. This is an audio experience, so people can't see my face. It's on fire. but thank you both. And like I said, this will come out and maybe we'll do a little special discount on the book. If people buy from us, I have no control over the rest of the world's pricing, but I can control it on our purchase direct from us pricing. So I'll put a little note in the show notes with a little discount for listeners if they'd like to pick up the book from us.
Perfect.
So yeah. Thank you both.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Witch Lit is a production of Thousand Volt Press and is edited by Julian Rashke. Our intro music is Cosmic Glow by Andrew Kay, and our outro music is Voices by Alexander Shinekar. Transcripts and all our previous episodes are available at witchlitpod.com, and you can follow us on Instagram at witchlitpod. Please help other witches find us by leaving a rating or review wherever you listen to podcasts. Thank you for listening to and reading Witch Lit.